My name is Michelle Owu, and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the One Another Project and the Wellcome Trust. The date today is the 31st of August 2009. The time is 2:19 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age, and where you come from, please?
Certainly. Hi, I'm Sally Butcher. I'm 46, and I'm from Shoeburyness in Essex.
How are you feeling?
Quite excited, actually. Now I've seen the plinth, and I realised it's not Everest, it's just a plinth. I feel much better. Looking forward to it.
Who else have you brought along with you tonight?
I've brought my mother and my husband, because that's what I pay them for, and if they hadn't come along, I'd have had them sacked, basically.
Can you remember how you first heard about this project?
I blog on a website called Londonist, www.londonist.com. We do all things London, and we've always been followers of Mr. Gormley's work. And anything wacky that comes up like that, we always get first sniff at it. In fact, one of my fellow bloggers was up last Saturday morning dressed as a lovely resplendent bride, all in red. So actually two of us managed to get on the plinth. When push came to shove, of course, I'm not going to live blog it or any of the bravado that I came out with. I'm just going to go up there and enjoy it, because it's for me and not for the blog site. But that's how I heard about it, and you know, we've been following what's been going on and writing a little bit about it, which has been great.
Why did you think it was something that you wanted to be part of?
I've always been a participator, and I was always climbing trees just because they're there, and a plinth is just like a tree, really. I'm a tomboy. I like the idea of that sort of thing. And I'm a fairly expressive person, so even though I didn't actually know what I wanted to do when I signed up, I knew I had a lot of things to say and to think about. I just thought it would be fun.
How did you feel when they told you that you had a place?
I was really, really excited, even though it was 3 a.m. Then I started thinking about the logistics of it, and I was a bit sort of scared, and then I started being excited again. So that's it, really, one more or less constant plateau of excitement.
Can you describe for me what you're wearing, please, and what you've brought along with you?
Yes, certainly. I'm a shopkeeper. I've got a shop called Persepolis in Peckham. I wouldn't say it's famous, but it's a landmark. It's a very silly shop, and everything we do is on, well, everything I do is either on blackboards outside the shop or bits of yellow paper, whether it's my newsletter, and my shop's annotated with lots of silly signs, because most shops are very boring. So if I have a thought about a product, I'll write it down and put it on the product. So I'm actually bought my philosophy as a shopkeeper and my beliefs about shopkeeping and a little bit of my shop along. I've got 30 hats, each of which have two signs, front and back, which give all the aspects, all the facets of shopkeeping, if you like, because Britain is a nation of shopkeepers, and shopkeepers are people too. And I really wanted to fly the flag for shopkeepers, especially now with the recession hitting. A lot of small shops are closing. You know, shopkeepers are finding it hard, and I wouldn't presume to speak for the nation of shopkeepers, that would be ridiculous. But I am at least sort of saying, go hug a shopkeeper, be nice to your corner shop, visit it, look after it, value it. And also I want to say that behind every shop fascia is a real person. A lot of what I'm doing is based on a poem by Robert Browning called Shop, which describes the fact. It's a very, very long poem, actually, but it basically says, if there's all these riches in a shop window, think how a shopkeeper must live and how fascinating his house is. My own house isn't that fascinating, but it's just a nice thought that behind every shop is a lot more, and a story.
When did you open your shop?
We my husband's Iranian, our shop's Iranian. We've been importing for about 15 years now. We opened the shop about 8 years ago, and it's a lot more than a shop. We sort of showcase Iran and everything about it. I try to present the fluffy, friendly face of Iran, and there's a lot to it. As we import food, and I'm not really very good at shopkeeping, I sit in my back room and write, so I've actually written a recipe book about food and Iranian habits and all sorts of things. So,
where did you meet your husband?
We used to work in catering, and catering isn't a very conducive thing for long-term relationships. So we got out of catering and started our own import business. And as I mentioned, as he's Iranian, it seemed logical to do that, because it's when we started importing, there wasn't very much on the market. And so it was an unusual thing to be doing.
Do Have you been out to Iran?
I haven't, even though I've written this book. I've now called it Persia and Peckham, because that's what it is. It's my perception of the Iranian culture through reacting and my relationship with my in-laws, with my husband's family. There's a lot of Peckham in the book too. But, you know, it's now a great source of embarrassment to my husband. He hasn't actually taken me to Iran, so that'll be the next step.
Why did you write the book?
As I said, I'm not a very good shopkeeper. I don't have many talents, but I can write a little bit, and so it just seemed a logical thing to do. And also, when we opened the shop, I was bringing out a newsletter quite regularly, which had recipes in it, and I found my customers were clamouring for recipes. And I was a chef, and so it seemed logical to combine the writing and the cooking and put it all together in a book. Took me a very long time to find a publisher, but I was very lucky. And now I'm working on a second and a third book simultaneously. So,
what will that cover?
Well, the third book is of great interest to what I'm doing because it is actually about shopkeeping. And I would hope very much that if my third book is lucky enough to see the light of day, then I'd be able to in turn to link back to this project and what I did here. The second book is a cookbook. It's coming out in 2011. It'll be a vegetarian Middle Eastern cookbook. So that's really exciting because that's actually got a publisher. So, yeah, you see, already I'm proving shopkeepers do a lot more. I mean, actually, I do my ironing in my back room, but I also do a lot of writing. So,
can you describe some of the things that we might find in your shop?
Oh, well, we're a corner shop, so we sell milk and bread and eggs, but we sell Persian spices, Persian herbs. I sell aromatherapy oils, not because they're Persian, but because I like them. My shop probably resembles the inside of my head. It's maximalist, cluttered, very atmospheric. We have regular storytelling evenings and all sorts of things. Anything with a slight Persian connection, we just clear out half the stock and make people sit on the floor and put our samovar on, and we, you know, we'll have book signings. We've had a comedy evening. We co-host the Peckham Literary Festival in November. So there's a lot going on there. It's not just a shop, it's a sort of mini Persian cultural embassy, if you like, for Peckham.
When you arrived, was the size of the Persian community much smaller?
The Persian community in London is huge. I don't think it's particularly growing anymore. I think there are about 70,000 in London and the home counties. Their spiritual home in London is Kensington. There's lots of Iranian shops there, but because we're the only shop south of the river, they do tend to visit us. Which is great, and because I'm English and my husband's Iranian, we get a lot of customers in the same sort of situation, because they know that I'm not just an Iranian shop. We've got all the right Iranian goods, we're totally authentic, but if people are a bit stuck, I'm very happy to talk them through buying ingredients or what to do on this situation or that situation. So yeah, it's fun.
Can you describe Persian food? What kind of dishes?
Yeah,
I'm
very lucky because we spend a lot of time when we're not in Tubriness in London with my in-laws, so I've learnt a lot from my mother-in-law. Persian food is rice-based. They eat a lot of rice and bread. The best food is home food, which is why I wrote the book, because if you go to a Persian restaurant in London, you'll get kebab. And it's meat on sticks, and this is what Iranians like, food cooked over fire. It's a very sort of famous thing in Iran, and you don't get a lot of the lovely home cooking, which is sort of casseroles with fragrant spices, quite often with fruit, beautiful soups. So I really wanted to reflect what was going on in the home.
Where did the name Persepolis come from?
Well, Persepolis is the ancient capital of Iran. It was actually given to Iran by Alexander the Great. Well, they don't call him great in Iran, when he ransacked the place, but it's the popular name of what is still known as Persepolis to this day. And in Iranian it's actually called Takht-e Jamshid, which means Jamshid's throne, which is also the name of my husband, so it ties in really, really well.
Have you picked up much Iranian?
I speak Farsi. It's a very easy language. It's my party trick. Everyone thinks it's frightfully impressive, and it's not. It's Indo-European, which means if you've got a smattering of another language, then it's really easy language to absorb. It follows standard grammatic rules. It's only the alphabet that's hard. But with a smattering of shorthand or anything else, you can soon turn yourself to the Arabic alphabet. So yes, I figure if you love someone from another nation, it's polite to learn their language. Also, I was quite convinced everyone was always talking about me, which they weren't, but out of paranoia, I thought, well, I better find out.
Why Peckham?
It alliterates so well with Persia, but that's not the real reason. My in-laws had a property there, which they weren't using very well. We thought we could do better. So we started importing through there, and then eventually we opened the shop. We opened the shop when Peckham was still suffering somewhat. It was just after Damilola Taylor's tragic death, and Peckham had a very, very bad image. It's improved considerably over the last few years because of concerted effort to make it better. We started up the I Love Peckham Festival there. We're all about giving Peckham a big hug. We have as many festivals as we can, actually, just to get the word across that it's not all doom and gloom. I've lived in little villages in England. I've lived abroad. It's just the friendliest neighbourhood. It's a lovely, lovely place to be. There's a real buzz. My neighbours, my shop neighbours, are great. People that come in the shop are great. There is trouble, but it's no worse than the trouble you get anywhere else in London, and I really recommend it. But not to too many people, otherwise we'll get all, you know, loved up. So.
What does it say on the sign you've brought along with you then?
Well, this is my first hat, and it's a really nasty pink tacky trilby from lovely people at Sancto, a carnival shop in my hometown. And it says, behind every shopkeeper lies a story. And after I've finished wearing this hat, I will go on to change my hat every 2 minutes, trying to tell the story of this shopkeeper. I haven't been able to represent everything, and I don't want to go up there all religion and politics. These are the silly things of my life that I think are salient points. So every hat is telling a little bit of my story. And along the way, hopefully, I'll send out a few messages to people I love or people I think that might be watching. There we go. I mean, every shopkeeper tells a different story, very different story. Hopefully one or two of them might watch and find this silly and fun. I had an article in Speciality Food magazine who thought it was absolutely great, because they're always on the lookout for foodie stories, especially for independent stores, and so they thought this was really lovely, so they kindly publicised it.
When did you know that you were going to take part?
It was about 6 weeks ago, I think. An email came through. So, of course, at first when you read it, you don't really believe it, but yeah, it was about 6 weeks ago.
Tell me a little bit more about where you grew up.
I'm born and bred in Southend, in Essex. I was born in Lee. I went to school at Southend High School for Girls. I spent a lot of time in Westcliff as well, and I now live in Shoebury, so that just about covers the whole borough. We live in Shoebury because it's quiet, it's sleepy, it's completely different from Peckham. My lovely stepchildren live there, so it's easy for us. We can hear birds singing in the morning, which we don't in Peckham. Not that there aren't any birds, we just can't hear them. It's nice and near to the sea, so I can get fresh air, we can go cycling. It's a sleepy little place. It gets a lot of knocks, so one of my hats will be the fact that I'm a Shoebury resident. And, you know, I'm proud of it. I enjoy being there.
Why does it get knocks?
I don't know. It's sort of the end of the line, literally the end of the Fenchurch Street line, and a lot of people, I think, regard it as that. And I don't really know why. I think a lot of people perhaps just don't understand it very well. But it's got an area full of history. We've had smugglers, there's Roman remains. Of course, there's a Shoebury garrison, which was very valued until just recently. Now it's been converted into a rather large housing estate. But there's a lot of history there, and it's very beautiful. It's where the Thames turns the corner into the North Sea, and it's lovely. It's very quiet, and if you like birds and just peace and sea, then it's the best place in the world to observe it.
Was there ever any thought of moving to Peckham?
It's not something that was particularly high on my list, you know, my agenda in life, but I really do love it. I feel very much at home there. So it's great, really. We've got the best of both worlds, because we've got the sort of peace and quiet of the Essex coast, and then this sort of buzz. I mean, Peckham has a real buzz. It's the artist's HQ of London, if you like. The Evening Standard kindly dubbed us the next Hoxton, which I'm not really sure about. But there are a lot of squats which have been converted into glorious artistic places. One of which, I believe, is run by Mr. Gormley's daughter. We've got Frank's Campari Bar, which is a sculpture park, and so on a multi-storey car park. And there's the wonderful Area 10, which is an old wood yard, which is always having fantastic raves and parties, and I love it. So it's a really, really buzzy area.
You mentioned the Isle of Peckham Festival and also the Literary Festival. How did you get involved with those events?
Well, I started sitting on committees, and I very quickly stopped sitting on committees because you spend a lot of time not doing anything very much. So I thought I'll become a doer rather than a sitter. And so I suggested starting the I Love Peckham Festival with a bit of community money. We got it going. It's a street-based festival done on a very low budget. And this year we haven't actually done it at all because there's no budget. But it's all about bringing art to the streets, pushing the image of Peckham. We've filled Peckham Town Square with art, with children's activities. We've had mime, music, song, dance, all sorts of things. It's been absolutely great. And then we ask all the local shops to try and coordinate events to go with it. And it's usually been in August, but as I said, we've run out of money this year. So, Peckham Literary Festival was just because it just sounds so silly, doesn't it? I mean, who expects Peckham to have a literary festival? And we've got one bookshop and an award-winning library. And I just thought, well, yeah, I want to be a bookseller too. Let's have a literary festival. And so we did. The first year was two women and two shops and 3 days and six events. And then last year was the second year. We had a whole week of events, all of which were packed.
Do you sell books?
I do. I'd rather sell more, but I just sell what I can get away with, as in books about Iran, books about Middle Eastern food. We sell books in Persian as well. So I'm an honorary bookshop, not a real one.
How do you describe yourself as a person?
Well, I'm a Leo, so I'm meant to be extroverted. I don't know that I am necessarily. I sign up for every challenge I possibly can in life. Sometimes I get there and I think, eek, what have I done? But usually it's great fun. As the years go by, I realise I'm probably more of an observer. At parties, I'm usually in the kitchen listening rather than being the life and the soul. But that's probably because I think as I grow older, I'm starting to feel that I'm ready to write. It's taken me 40 years to feel that I'm ready to write. But now I've got there, I'm taking a step back and I do a little bit more observing. It was tempting to go up on the plinth and write, but how much can you write in the dark on the plinth with possible rainstorm? So no, I'm just going to go up there and have fun.
Were you always interested in writing when you were at school?
Yes. I first of all wanted to be a geologist, and after that I wanted to be an ornithologist, but they were just silly childhood things because I could spell them, I suppose. And after that, no, it was always to be a writer, a journalist or a writer. It's taken me a long time, but hey, it doesn't matter. I'm there, and it makes me very, very happy. So.
Before this interview, we were talking, so we happened to have gone to the same school. And you mentioned a teacher that had particularly encouraged you.
Yes, Mrs. Simpson was the English teacher at Southend High School for Girls. She was also the deputy headmistress there. She was a perhaps dour Scottish lady, but she had a very quiet, gentle understanding of what I wanted to do. And when I told her at the grand old age of 14 that I wanted to write a book, she said, okay, yes, you probably will. You go and do it. And so when my first book came out, of course, I gave her a mention because the fact that she didn't laugh meant a lot, and I treasured it all those years. She sadly died a number of years ago. But, you know, hopefully other people at school will remember her fondly. And I think everybody has one particular teacher that they gel with that gives them a kick when it's needed. And she was my special teacher.
What's important to you in life at the moment, would you say?
The fact that I found out that my second book is coming out is great. I find that I need to write. I'm at my happiest when I've got a million and one writing projects to do. And it's amazing. I sort of got to the age of 46 without having felt... I mean, I've always felt this need, but now I'm actually writing things that people are reading. It's the most fulfilling thing ever. So that's very important. It's also really important to me to help my husband. He's going through Open University at the moment. And I really want him to see it through to fruition.
What's
so.
He studying?
He's studying IT, which is going to be incredibly useful. Yes, I want to make sure he finishes that. I mean, it's up to him. I'm no bully, I'm no nag. But it's important to me that, you know, he's studying and achieving things alongside me, so that's great.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yes, if anyone wants a job part-time shopkeeping, I'm getting a bit desperate now, so yeah.
Do they need to speak Farsi?
No, no, they just need to be extremely flexible, very understanding. So, because it's all getting a bit much, the festivals and the shopkeeping. In fact, I do the shopkeeping really badly as well. So, yes, because at the moment I'm working 7 days a week and it's a bit too much. And I'd just like to say thank you to Artichoke and Mr. Gormley and everyone, because this is extremely silly, absolutely wonderful, great stuff. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.